Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Imagine you're walking down an icy sidewalk in Anchorage, and you slip and twist your ankle. It hurts, so you limp for a few days. Your ankle then begins to heal, but without even realizing it, you've started walking a little differently. Your hip moves differently, your pelvis shifts, your back starts working harder. Months later, your ankle feels fine, but now your back hurts. What happened? Our bodies are incredibly adaptable. They constantly make adjustments to protect us after an injury or accommodate pain. Most of the time, these adaptations help us heal, but sometimes the very strategies that protect us in the short term can create new problems down the road. Today, we're going to explore how our bodies move, why they sometimes stop moving the way they're designed to, with our expert, Alisa Carroll. Alisa is a physical therapist who specializes in orthopedics and sports medicine, chronic pain, even TMJ and headaches. She earned her doctorate of physical therapy from the University of Montana and brings more than 15 years of clinical experience to her work. She practices at Progressive Physical Therapy with locations throughout South Central Alaska, and she's known for a whole person approach she calls fitness forward, treating movement itself as medicine, alongside hands-on techniques like dry needling, cupping, and active release therapy. Today's episode is pre-recorded, but I'm really glad to be able to share this conversation with you. While we won't be taking calls today, we do eagerly invite your feedback or suggestions via email at line1@alaskapublic.org. Alisa, hello and welcome to Line One.
Thank you, Dr. Woodruff. It's an honor to be here.
Alisa, before we talk about the specifics of physical therapy, I want to know more about you and your journey and what got you into this field.
I was a production potter and I was a wilderness guide, and I was also doing some massage therapy on the side. And I got to a point in my life where I needed to supplement my income a little bit better. And so I thought, okay, I'll go back to school. And I knew I loved anatomy and I knew I liked working with my hands. But I still thought, oh, I'll just get this little side gig as a radiologist or a hygienist or some kind of like associates in nursing. And so I started taking classes at UAA to get prerequisites because I had an art degree. And that summer I was guiding a sea kayaking trip, and I was just had this one moment where this client was sort of doing this slow motion dance in front of a glacier. And when I started watching her body move, and then I talked to her later throughout that week, I learned that she was a physical therapist, and it just clicked. I just knew, like, oh, that would be perfect for me. And it was daunting because getting an associate's degree is a lot different than getting a doctorate degree, but I just kind of rolled up my sleeves and got committed and kept studying and moving forward.
That is the epitome of art translating to science,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
it's science,
I think,
in action.
Artists are scientists and the best scientists are artists. So it was a good fit.
Absolutely. And so because of that, you knew you wanted to do something hands-on with the body. And was it that person being the physical therapist and how you saw the way she was moving that you decided physical therapy is the way? Like, did you know right away when you started your classes?
Oh, yeah, I knew right away. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just signed up for anatomy and physiology and I got inspired. But I did have big red flashing warning lights go on when it's not just, I saw myself as an outpatient ortho physical therapist from the get-go, but most of physical therapy is in the hospital. It's neuro, it's stroke, spinal cord, all these things. You know, you have to go through that whole lecture on how your brain sees things backwards and upside down when you have a stroke. I mean, those lectures and those weeks of study were very hard, and it was hard to be motivated when I knew I wasn't necessarily going to be treating those kinds of patients. But it gives you this huge picture because those people end up leaving the hospital and coming to outpatient orthopedics. And so you have this great appreciation for what they've been through.
Right.
And it's good. It was a good education.
So you didn't really see yourself working in the hospital setting?
No, I didn't. And I knew that I couldn't be a nurse because I can't really stay awake at night.
Oh, goodness, yes. I felt the same way when I was delivering babies. Yes, I do like to sleep. Okay, so you wanted to get your sleep. Well, the field of physical therapy seems really broad. And I think a lot of us do think of physical therapy as someone that helps after you've had a major surgery, like a knee replacement mm-hmm. or a hip replacement. And so you do think about that time in the hospital. Can you tell us in the outpatient world, what do you see typically? What kinds of patients do you take care of?
I think the main thing that drives people to come to physical therapy is either they can't sleep, they can't fall asleep, or they wake up and sleep because something hurts, or they can't do their job appropriately because their muscles are too tight and they are uncomfortable all day long, or maybe they're an athlete and they like to run or bike or swim, but then they can't keep that level of cardio fitness up and the mental health part of that because some body part hurts. Mm-hmm. So, and they're motivated to move forward, continue being active.
Well, that makes sense to me. You know, are there conditions that physical therapists treat that we may be surprised to know about? Maybe we didn't consider.
Oh, sure. Yes. So, you know, in the world of outpatient orthopedics, most providers are comfortable treating classic things like rotator cuff problems of the shoulder, low back pain, thoracic spine pain, neck pain. Maybe they don't realize that we treat headaches and that headaches can come from tight joints in your neck that maybe don't feel sore or achy, but that's what's generating the headache. Or temporomandibular joint dysfunction, jaw pain. We treat concussions. We have specialists at our clinic that do vestibular problems like balance deficits and just people feeling dizzy all the time. We do pelvic floor. And one of the most exciting things is chronic pain. So we have pain specialists that deal with any kind of pain that's lasted longer than 3 months is termed chronic pain. And pain like that, the brain perceives pain in your body as it's an alarm system that goes off to protect some kind of tissue in your body. But sometimes those alarm bells get stuck in the on position. And so people continue to have this pain and it is very real. And, you know, people used to say, oh, you're just making it up or get over it. But it's real. And there are definite ways to kind of sleuth out what is going on and reset your nervous system so it's not so sensitive.
So you don't have to live with this pain.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. There's brilliant physical therapists that deal with this issue.
So it seems like there's a lot of specialties within physical therapy.
Oh, yes.
So how do you come to figure out where you want to specialize? And then is there more training that you pursue for those specialties?
Oh, yeah. We take continuing ed classes all the time. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you have to take it for your license, but most physical therapists take way more continuing ed than they need to take because we're just so passionate about learning new things. And, you know, we meet every other month and we present on what class we took so we can teach our colleagues what we learned and try new things out on each other's bodies and give each other feedback. So continuing education is a huge part of what we do all the time. That's what makes our career is so exciting, is that we're just constantly learning. And then people bring their bodies to us, and then we learn through their bodies, and we tell them what research says and what other has worked well for other patients. And just collaboratively, we just try to get people better.
So lifelong learning.
It's lifelong learning.
Yes.
That's great.
Now, do you kind of segment yourself into, I'm only treating sports injuries, or I'm only treating orthopedics, or I only do pelvic floor physical therapy? Are there people that kind of segment into specific subfields?
There are people for sure. I mean, I would say, like if you are a pelvic floor specialist, you are going to have a heavy caseload of pelvic floor patients because there's not as many therapists as there is need. But anybody who does that probably would love to have a shoulder or knee injury in there just to make their week feel a little more holistic and well-rounded instead of just doing their specialty all the time, but other people love just focusing on their specialty. So it really just comes down to the therapist and what they're interested in and how they want to fill their schedule.
Well, I've heard you describe yourself as a movement specialist. So is that a term that's commonly used within physical therapy? And what does that really mean?
So I think a lot of people don't know the difference between a physical therapist versus an athletic trainer or a chiropractor or a massage therapist. And then now that we do dry needling, you know, it's definitely not acupuncture, even though we use acupuncture needles. So what we do as a movement specialist is we try to integrate body systems that generate and maintain good movement and motion. And so we might use a little massage in that. We might use an acupuncture needle to make a really tight muscle twitch. And so then we can go forward to give an exercise and they would have a deeper knee bend or better balance because we released that muscle or we did a little massage on that area just so we can bust through to another level. Then they can do an exercise that strengthens them and gets them better. But it's not like palliative care where somebody's laying there having something done to them. As a movement specialist and fitness forward, we're trying to empower people to go, look, we are the messengers. This is the information. If we have barriers like your tight muscle, we're going to treat that and we're going to keep moving forward so you can heal yourself.
So they have to take part in their healing process.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. I think the way you said that is going to really change how people think about their own bodies, their pain, and physical therapy in general. Outside of someone being referred to you for a knee replacement, let's say, are there common movement problems or injuries that you see again and again, maybe regardless of age or lifestyle?
Yes, definitely, especially regardless of age or lifestyle. The scenario that comes to mind is weak hips.
Weak hips?
Weak hips.
Okay.
I rarely see someone come into the clinic with big glutes and say they have back pain. Like if people have really strong hips, they have this wonderful shelf for their spine to float up off of. And when I was just starting out, a important mentor to me, she would say, the knee is just the poor guy in the middle between a weak hip and a stiff ankle. And I can tell you in 16 years of treating bodies, that is 100% true. Every time.
So are you saying you need strong butt muscles?
Yes.
That's the issue here.
Yes. Okay. Like you watch the Olympics and my husband and I, we always say big butts win because you're getting stability. You're getting propulsion. All the force is generated from your core and your hips are the biggest part of that. And so people like forget like, oh, my knee hurts. Well, you know, their hips are weak and your knee is just a hinge joint. But if your hips and your pelvis are swiveling around causing that hinge to move diagonally, then it's not hinging with equal load bearing on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm thinking about issues with aging and muscle loss. And also now I'm thinking about medications that we're taking for weight loss that are also leading to the loss of muscle. Are you seeing more people coming in now, even at younger ages, with muscle loss, especially in that area, leading to issues? I don't know if that's something you've noticed.
I think a huge area of muscle loss that we need to look at in our society is the strength between our shoulder blades. Mm. We have young kids on screens that are hunched forward. We have elderly patients that are kyphotic and hunch forward, but it all comes down to, did you have good posture throughout your lifespan? And one thing that just makes you spring into good posture is if you have stiff, short, strong muscles between your shoulder blades. If your muscles are short and working properly to hold your shoulder blades up and together, you don't have to think, correct my posture. They're just like going to flop there.
I'm sitting up higher now.
So that's a big thing. Get the mobility, keep the mobility in your thoracic spine. Strengthen your shoulder blades. And if you're looking at a screen, don't let your head drop down. Don't hinge where your neck meets your back. And just have your head up and have the screen at a reasonable position where you're using your eyes and not your neck to see what you're looking at.
So you need to look straight on at the screen.
As much as you can.
Not be looking down.
For sure.
So much.
Yes. I look in the back seat at my daughter and I'll be like, get your
head up.
Head up when you are choosing that Spotify song.
Now, you do need to explain kyphotic. You mentioned an older person and that they're kyphotic.
Kyphotic, yeah. That's when your body goes into a slouch position, but then it might stay fixed in that position.
So I mean, from bone density loss?
From bone density loss, and you get collapse in your vertebrae in the front. And so then that puts you in that position and you can't stand up. I mean, most people have many years in which this is developing where there's time to correct that. So, I mean,
and that's the hunched over look.
Just the hunched over look, right? Just get a foam roller and start doing back bends over it, just trying to open up your chest.
Now, back bends may sound a little bit of a reach for some. So,
not back bends, but just anything. You can even put a pillow behind your back in bed and let your arms drop out.
And laying flat on your back on top of this roller or pillow. Okay.
Yes. Let the muscles in the front of your chest stretch out, take some deep breaths, let your back go into erect posture in a lying down position. Maybe squeeze your shoulder blades together, feel them touch your spine. Just make sure you maintain that mobility.
So it's like the opening, like opening your center.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. And then what does the breathing do? Is that specific when you're breathing? Is that just to relax that muscle into the movement?
Breathing helps with
I mean, of course, we want
everything.
To breathe,
but... Yes, if you're trying to stretch something, it's nice to take some breaths. And on the exhale, really think about letting that muscle tension go. You can use breathing to help you stabilize your core. If you're going to pick something up, you can exhale. It will help you push something heavy. Integrating your breathing with movement is one thing physical therapists help teach their patients all the time. If you're hunched over in that slouch position, a lot of times you're taking shallow breaths. And you might be using accessory muscles, they're called. They're these little muscles up in your neck that are helping to lift your ribs up because your diaphragm is all scrunched and slouched forward. If you go back to better posture and you can use your diaphragm to breathe, it takes a lot of load off your neck muscles and it might decrease your headaches or decrease the pain in your back. If you just learn to use your diaphragm to breathe.
Another thing that surprised me or stands out to me about physical therapists that you're trained in looking beyond where it hurts to find out why it hurts. Could you walk me through that mindset? How do you figure out why it's hurting if there wasn't a specific accident or injury or surgery you can point to? How do you figure out why something is hurting?
Well, first and foremost, my job is to listen. So if you come to me and tell me something hurts, I want to listen and I want to ask really good questions to figure out what you're telling me. Like, do you have pain? When did it start? How intense was it? Did you have swelling? Did you have any other thing like numbness, tingling down your arm? We're just trying to paint a picture in the back of my mind as I'm listening to you tell me this story of how your injury happened. And I'm kind of putting it into categories. And then as we go through the session, I will do different tests. I'll look at your range of motion. I'll see if your tendon reflexes are working. I'll have you shut your eyes. We'll see if your sensation is the same on each side. And it's putting us down a trail one way that we're going to go, okay, this is our hypothesis, this is what we think is going on, and then we try to do some kind of intervention and see if that helps us. Are we still going down the right trail? If it gets better, okay, great, let's go further down this trail. If it doesn't, then we back up and we figure out another path.
Okay, so then you're figuring that out, and why is that important? Or is it then when you're figuring out where this started that you're going to start with that? So you may have pain. Let's say you may come in with pain in your knee, but it actually is something that started from something in your hip or in your butt. So then your treatment, is it centering on this area, the origin, or are you doing things with the knee as well?
Well, it's good. Everything. Yeah, for sure. I mean, my job is to figure out what is the primary driver of your pain. Is it muscle, tendon, joint, nerve? Is it some funky way your brain and body are coordinating movement that to avoid putting weight on your right foot? And then that is, contributing to
the pain.
Your pain? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my job, is to figure that out and listen. And then we try things out to test and retest our theory. So we have like what we call a comparable sign. It hurts when I squat. Okay. What else? When else does it hurt? Oh, if I kneel on my knee, it hurts. Or if I lift my hip in this way, it hurts. So we have three comparable signs: squatting, lifting your knee. And we do an intervention, like maybe we'll do a manual therapy technique, or we'll do a dry needling point, or I'll give you an exercise to help turn on little postural muscles, and then we'll retest. Okay, squat now. Better, worse, or the same? And then depending on what the results are, we go down another pathway. I'm spending an hour with you in your body and this thing that's been bugging you for the past 3 months, and we're trying to figure out what it is and how to make it better.
I like how you explained that and how you spoke about the primary driver and finding that primary driver. Mm-hmm. You know, we use that in all fields of medicine, because you can't just treat the problem. You have to figure out where it came from and treat that as well. So I think that you're answering a lot of questions, and I have a lot more for you, but we do need to take a short break. A reminder for our listeners today that this is a pre-recorded show and we will not be receiving calls. After this short break, we will continue our discussion of movement, pain, and physical therapy with Dr. Alisa Carroll as Line 1 continues statewide. Welcome back to Line 1. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. As a reminder, today's episode is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking live calls. However, we are delighted to continue our conversation with our expert, Alisa Carroll, who is a doctor of physical therapy with Progressive Physical Therapy, with locations throughout South Central Alaska. In our first segment, we heard about her path into physical therapy and how PTs think a little differently about pain. And in this next segment, we are going to get a little more practical and talk about when it's actually time to see a physical therapist and the specific techniques she uses here in her office. I wanted to ask you about imaging. So kind of figuring out what the primary driver is. And I'm sure some people may be referred to you and they may have imaging, an x-ray or an MRI or something that points to an issue. Does everyone who comes to see you have imaging? Do they need imaging before they can see you?
No, definitely not. And a lot of times I think that it's a better spent money to come and try PT before going to get expensive imaging, because a lot of musculoskeletal pain can feel like it's 10 out of 10. Cut my arm off. I don't want this arm anymore. It hurts so bad. Oh. But if you get imaging, a lot of times you need to be prepared for what you're going to see, because I have seen atrocious results of an MRI on somebody's neck that then goes on to become pain-free and live their life for another decade without having neck pain. So it's hard if you just immediately get, opioids or you get imaging and people say, oh, I'm bone on bone, or I have a herniated disc. And you go, well, when was that imaging? Oh, it was 2 years ago. It's like, well, your disc is probably healed. But if people perseverate on what the image said, sometimes they can't move forward from that. When what we really do in physical therapy is we just look at your function and we want to get you back to feeling good and having function. Do you really care what your image said? You care if you can go back to your sport or if you can take care of your kids without having pain. You don't really care what that ligament's doing in the side of your ankle. I mean, you do, but you know, that's not the main goal. So no, you do not need imaging. And sometimes imaging can mess you up in the way you think about your injury. Other times, if we've been struggling through 8 weeks of PT and we're not getting results, yes, let's go try to figure out, is there something we're missing? Imaging is wonderful.
Right. Well, and there's pain, mm-hmm. and pain is absolutely real, but pain is also in your head.
Right.
There are signals that are sent to your brain that relate pain.
Yeah.
And so you can form other pathways and control the way that you perceive pain. But it's a really difficult thing. And it's not saying that pain is not real, because it absolutely is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's about these pathways and nerves send pain signals to our brain. And then our brain analyzes that and says what kind of response we're going to have. So I think with the changing the movements and changing the way that we move our body, mm-hmm. there are some things we can control. Now, if it's something that's a surgical fix, I gather they probably need imaging and would have to pursue that route. But
right, absolutely.
Not everything, the majority of things I'm thinking are not that you're seeing.
Correct. The majority of things are not. And the more education people get about what pain is, the less pain they have. And that's where the whole field of pain science comes in. It's if you had a car accident and you have whiplash disorder and you leave the ER with a cervical collar and no education, you're going to have more anxiety about your whiplash than if somebody was given a 10-minute movie to watch before they left the ER and then sent to physical therapy or given instruction that, you know, this happens to a lot of people, you're going to get back to your normal daily function, just gently start using your neck as gradually as you can, versus staying in that cervical collar, being in this sort of fear place.
Yeah, and there would be a fear of movement if you're
putting
in a collar.
Fear of movement. It's called fear avoidance. Yeah. And then you have the demolition derby drivers that get rear-ended all the time and they think it's fun. And those people don't have neck pain. And they might have all kinds of crazy things on their MRI with different structures that have tears and whatnot. But it's if you have pain because of a sudden or traumatic and frightful experience, that pain's going to be a lot different than pain that was from an elective surgery or from a injury where you got a lot of education on how to recover.
I can see that. If there's more trauma involved or fear involved, it's going to increase that pain. So education is mm-hmm. the key. Now, sitting here, I'm trying to sit in a different way in front of you. Are you watching people walk? Are there things that you're even seeing when they come into the office the first time, or you're watching their gait? And what can you tell from that?
I love watching people walk. I love to go to the airport and watch people walk.
Really?
Yes, you can just see, oh, that poor person, their, you know, hip hurts and that hip is weak and they're throwing their trunk out to try to compensate, or their knee's not quite extending, so then they're sort of vaulting over that knee with little steps, and you can see their back is kind of hiked up and overworking, and there's so many fun things to look at. With just walking or with running, mm-hmm. it's fun to, you know, do a 5K run with a bunch of people and see all these different strategies. And some people with the worst strategies are the fastest runners and they have no pain. And other people have great optimal strategies, but maybe, you know, they there's no like true answer. It's just, if you come to me and something's hurting, then let's look at, you know, maybe what the optimal or best practice way of loading that joint would be. But it doesn't work for, you know, everybody's got their own special way to run or walk. It's just, if it's bothering you or hurting you, then we can make it better.
Well, I guess it's that, you know, different things will work for different people. And even though our bodies are very similar and powerful, they're also very different, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what are some of the biggest myths, I guess, about physical therapy that you find yourself correcting with patients? What educational piece do you give over and over?
I think the biggest myth is that people are going to go to PT and have something done to them to take their pain away. And I feel like when people come to PT, like my ideal patient would say, I'm going to try PT. I'm going to get scheduled out. I have this window of time where I can come to a whole bunch of appointments in a row, you know, 1 to 2 times a week for like 6 to 8 weeks. And we're going to really focus on this. And that person's going to go home and try the exercises. And then they're going to come back with questions. I'm going to go home. I think about my patients all the time. I'm driving home from work and I'm like, oh, yeah, we should have done that. And oh, I'm going to send this research article to them. And oh, let me think about, maybe they should see an orthotic specialist and get some insoles for their shoes. So I get sad when people cancel their appointments because I think, oh, I was so ready to do this new thing. And so if you make an appointment and get a plan of care with a PT, just know that they are 100% committing to you for that time of plan of care, and they want to get you better. But they're just going to empower you. We sit on the sidelines. We give you all the ideas. We're the idea person. We try things out on you. And then it's the person's job. They're coming to PT to make themselves better.
How important are those at-home exercises?
I think they're pretty important. I think they're a window into your body to find a different way to move and be in the world. I mean, you can go on the internet and you can find 17 different exercises to help you with your shoulder pain. But how do you know which ones are best for you? Do you want to do 17 or do you want to do 2? Like, wouldn't you want to do the 2 that would get you better faster?
Yes.
Yes. So, yes. You know, I say do the 2. Do the 2 things for the week that I don't see you. And we're going to see, does it make you better, worse, or the same? If it makes you worse, that's great information. If it did nothing, that's great information. If you get better, we're on the right track. But if you don't try the 2 things that your PT came up with, then it's hard to know if it worked. And then people say, oh, well, I tried PT and it didn't work. I'm just going to go get surgery.
Right.
And you don't really want that, because then that's more time and more money. And then guess what? You do the surgery and they refer you to PT.
You're right back where you started. Yeah. Well, I am thinking about the online physical therapy, where maybe you'd see somebody online maybe once, mm-hmm. and then you get your exercises. And I know people have told me that they have, you know, oh, I have a printout of the exercises to do, mm-hmm. but it seems like a general list of exercises because they haven't actually been physically present with someone. How right. successful do you think you can be with an online program and one where they're just giving you a plan and then programs where they do see you online? Are there things that you're doing when you're with someone that are different that...
Oh, mm-hmm. 100%. Right. It's different okay. in person. I mean, that said, a lot of people come to me and they say, oh, I have Hinge Health. And Hinge Health tells me to do these 10 things. That's wonderful. Hinge Health is great. It gets people to move. I'm not going to have a problem with Hinge Health. And if they're doing all those things, and then that's going to boost their general body strength awareness. But if they're coming to PT, we're going to do the 2 things that get their specific pain to go away. And those may not be Hinge Health things. And if they are a more online-based program, we're going to do them with better intention. You're going to know what position to be in, what sequence to do it in. You know, you set your core and then you get your shoulder back and then you lift your arm. Just, we're going to be a little bit better.
I've also noticed in working with you and other physical therapists that you may think you're doing something correctly, and you may be, but it may not be the thing that's needed for your situation. And then you're able to make a change right then and there. Okay, no, not this exercise, mm-hmm. even though it may be a great exercise for the problem. Mm-hmm. But then you move on to actually the problem could be in this other area. So I think that would be really hard to reproduce without being with them.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, some people, I mean, they'll get better in a week or two with one kind of exercise for their knee, and then we're ready to move on. And we can dive deeper into maybe a more strenuous thing, a more dynamic, balance challenging exercise once they get to be strong enough. But, you know, people will do exercises and they'll have the same resistance for months and months. And it's like, no, you're ready to have a stronger TheraBand or up the weights. You always have to be progressing your exercises and changing them a little bit if you want to continue to see improvement.
Improvement, yes. Yeah. Like you said, you're empowering us.
Yes.
Well, can you be seen by a physical therapist without a referral? Do you need to have a referral to come over, or?
It depends on your insurance. And if you call our front desk, they will tell you if your insurance allows you to come to PT without a referral from a doctor. A lot of insurance plans through Blue Cross Blue Shield allow you to come and make your own appointment, and then I will submit a plan of care to the insurance company saying, hey, I think that what this person has is going to require 6 or 12 visits, and they then authorize that plan of care. And maybe there's a window like, okay, but we want this person to come within 3 months. So they focus on it and get it better. Blue Cross wants people to focus.
In and out.
Get their thing better and leave. Not mm-hmm. like come once a month or cancel a few appointments, do your exercises here and there. I mean, it's kind of good because they want you
to focus on getting better.
Yeah.
Now, do people know that? Do they know that they may be able to come without a referral? And do you find that patients know what conditions they need to come and see you for?
I think that people hear a lot through their friends. They hear mm-hmm. through their primary care physician. I get referrals. I work with a lot of other disciplines in the community. People at Advanced Body Solutions, they do medical massage. We refer back and forth a lot. I have lymphedema therapists, chiropractors, people that are, listening to people. If you get somebody for an hour, like a massage therapist or a social worker or counselor, we're listening to people. And so we're hearing what they need. And it's wonderful to work within our community to say, hey, I think you need to go see this other provider. They would really complement what we're doing in here. And so maybe we don't have to work on the muscle spasm part of your situation as much. If you go over and get some medical massage, we can just focus on making your joint move and getting you stronger while we're having our time together.
I like how you can coordinate with these other disciplines.
They're so fabulous.
Yes.
Our community is full of wonderful healers.
And then for you, you incorporate many techniques into what you do on a daily basis. So maybe you can talk to us about some of these techniques that you use, like what is dry needling, what is cupping, or active release therapy. Anything else that you typically use?
So dry needling is a technique where you use an acupuncture needle to treat a tight muscle or a trigger point. I use that technique. I did not go to acupuncture school. I do not know anything about your chi or your pulses or your systemic system and how acupuncturists are phenomenal people. And I by no means am doing acupuncture, but I can take a tight IT band and I can put a needle in that lateral quad and it might twitch or jump and it will release muscle tension, which will then allow you to do a deeper squat without pain. And so I'll do something like that for like 1 minute. Maybe I'll put some electrical stimulation on there and we'll vibrate it and shake that muscle until it relaxes, just so we can get you to do the exercise we want you to do. We might use cupping in that same, on that same knee if it has adhesions, if it has scar tissue, if it's just gotten so tight because you've been walking with a limp for so long because you have a boot on the other foot, and or we can use cupping to just release all that glommed up stuff that gets laminated together between your tissue.
Scarred and stuck together.
Just all scarred and stuck together, right?
So I might pull it apart physically with the cup.
We do. I mean, you put the suction on there, and instead of massage, like compressing the muscle, it is pulling all the tissues up and away from each other. And then I, while you have the cups on, I'll have you bend your knee and straighten your knee over and over and move your whole leg around in ways that are going to pull these different layers of fascia. And it pulls things apart to just free up. It's not pleasant, but it takes 3 to 5 minutes, and then you're done, and you feel a million times better. And you have little bruises on you, and you look like you're an Olympian.
Yay!
But it's very effective. And active release therapy is a technique, it's a manual therapy technique where I might pin your muscle down with my hand, and then I ask you to move. Like if you're lying on your stomach and I pin your calf muscle down and I ask you to pull your toes up towards your knee to dorsiflex your ankle, we can not only just stretch your calf muscle, but we can stretch just the specific parts of your calf that are really, really tight. So if you do a classic runner stretch and you're globally stretching that calf, that might not get at the specific little adhesions in that muscle complex, just right where we need to release it. So that's what active release is.
Well, these techniques are really interesting. They don't sound like the most comfortable thing, but I could see how they would really make a difference in your pain and relaxing the muscle, I guess, even though it seems intense, but definitely would release the tension that's already there. I have so many more questions, but we do need to take a short break and we will continue to talk about these techniques and prevention when we come back for our final segment. Today's episode is pre-recorded and we will not be taking live calls. Please share questions via email at line1@alaskapublic.org. We'll continue our discussion on staying active and injury prevention with our expert physical therapist, Elisa Carroll, when we return. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Just a note, today's show is pre-recorded, so we are unable to take calls. Let's continue to unravel the complexities of our bodies in the way they move with our expert, Elisa Carroll, who's a doctor of physical therapy. She works at Progressive Physical Therapy, who has clinics throughout South Central Alaska. She cares for patients with orthopedics and sports injuries, as well as headaches and TMJ. She provides whole person care and believes in the power of education and prevention of injuries. So you were telling us before the break about the techniques that you use. How do those techniques, or what other techniques do you use to treat people with headaches? Headaches can take over your life when people have chronic headaches, and they may not know that they can see a PT that can help. In what way do you help with that?
Well, there are multiple things that can cause headaches, and it's wonderful when people work with their doctors to figure out if it's a migraine or a tension type headache. or what we call a cervicogenic headache. And we work with a lot of tension and cervicogenic type headaches. And I would say that, you know, posture has a huge role to play. And if your 15-pound bowling ball that's sitting on the top of your spine,
your head,
if the top of your skull is over your palate and your palate is over your rib cage and your rib cage is over your pelvis, you are sitting out of gravity. Your bones are stacked on each other and no joint is having sheer force put on it.
So that's a good thing.
That's a great thing.
Okay. So we don't want anything taking all of the weight.
Right.
Okay.
And sometimes if you have a headache and you use a computer a lot, you might do a little test with yourself. And if you have a headache, take a break, go back, find some good posture, check in with your body, then go back to typing. And if you have what we call forward head position, that's when you slouch a little bit and your head goes forward to look at your screen or to concentrate on what you're doing. I remember being a student in the hospital seeing FHP on medical charts. Like, this patient has FHP. They have forward head posture. Like, that's a bad thing because now they have tension at the base of their skull because their 15-pound bowling ball is just 2 inches out in the world instead of being back over.
Positioned over their spine.
It's positioned over their spine and their pelvis, right?
Be taken. Okay.
So a lot of tension headaches and cervicogenic headaches are coming from muscles being spasmed to hold
in your neck.
In your neck. Those muscles are working very hard for 8 hours a day while you are typing to hold your head in this non-optimal position. And or your vertebra have discs and they have little spaces in between each vertebra. And if you get into a prolonged position, like for 2 hours, you're trying to get this legal report out and you just keep typing. Those spaces between your vertebra can get closed down and crimped a little bit, like because of your head
like
forward position. Your chin is forward, which is making you be in a position as if you're looking up, but you're not looking up. You're just shoving your neck in that position. So then, you know, the blood flow changes in that area and the pH of that tissue changes in that area because it's not getting perfusion because you have it stuck in this squished position.
It's like obstructed.
Yes, it's obstructed, right. So a lot of PTs treating headaches is treating, well, what is causing this to happen in the first place? And then if you've been sitting like that for a long time, your joints are probably super stiff. So we might massage or dry a needle in there to loosen the muscles up. And then I can get in and I can push up and down just gently to just get a little oscillation or movement in those, in between all the different vertebrae, all the little joints, just push, move. See if I can get something to glide and slide. I mean, if it's just stuck like a piece of rebar, then you're probably more likely to have headaches because your neck and your skull doesn't like that position.
So you have to change your posture, though. You're doing these techniques, but if you go back to work and you're sitting in that same way again.
Yes, right.
The condition will just continue.
Correct.
Mm. What about looking up? I know we have a lot of very large computer screens now, and so sometimes you're more looking up than straight ahead. Is that bad?
Well, you want to spend time looking up, looking down, looking forward. If you ideally can have a desk where you stand up, you can raise it up and then you can sit back down and you can vary your positions. That's a change is as good as a break kind of thing. make sure that, you know, you're looking straight, you're not angled and always having your screen to the left, but you're typing to the right, but yes. your head is always looking left if you're calling and using a phone on the right, but the screen is on the left. There's all these repetitive positions. If you're in those, it can just lead to different parts of your body getting stiff.
I think this is a good place to segue into prevention, because that's what this is if we do these things, we have good posture, we walk correctly, yes. then maybe we can prevent some of these things. And I know we had a conversation about athletes and our young athletes and not waiting for them to have an injury before seeking PT. So I don't typically think about physical therapy as prevention. But I am seeing now that this is a field where you are going to be preventing. Can you tell us more about prevention and prevention in athletes, prevention in young athletes?
I think it would be wonderful if every sports team could have a physical therapist come over and screen them for potential injuries. Sometimes the coach, you know, if the coach is open to working with a physical therapist, just in watching kids move and just basic things. When you jump and land, your knees should not go in. They should go out. What is athletic stance? How do you set your core? How do you push off and use your hip to get your force going instead of not thinking about anything? You know, people end up having injuries and then they overuse and overuse and overuse. My daughter was a volleyball player, and if somebody had a little tweaky shoulder when they started the season, and then by, you know, 2 months into the season, their serve is really hurting them when they hit that ball with such force up and over their head. So if we could clean it up in the beginning of the season and screen people, tell them what to look for, and either get them a referral to physical therapy or, I mean, there's lots of physical therapists that are willing to come and help, and in whatever creative way where people are compensated or valued or volunteering, there's so many ways to get this information to athletes that I think would be a great thing for our community.
It would be valuable at the beginning. And there's certain sports where it leads to maybe an increased likelihood of certain injuries. You know, you're thinking volleyball and shoulder problems, or tennis and elbow or knee problems.
Yes, yeah.
So are there things that you can do to decrease injury, or are you saying the technique that you have when you're playing it is more likely to cause an injury? So basically, yeah, is there something you can do to decrease your risk of injury in a sport that just has a higher likelihood of certain problems?
Oh, 100%. When we were, you know, in grad school, we went to these ultimate frisbee competitions, and we would just run everybody through a quick screen. Hey, can you do a side plank and lift your leg up 10 times? Or can you do a single leg back squat and can you do it 10 times? Or is your knee shaking and moving in and out? Or is your leg solid when you're on one leg going up and down? You just do these screens, and then whatever you can't do in the screen, it becomes your exercise. And it's just a quick way to set people up, say, hey, what you're doing, you're fine, you're not injured, but you have a higher likelihood of becoming injured if you're weak in these areas. And then you just give them one thing they can do to change that. And if they need further advice, they can come to PT. And if it's specific to their sport, that's more the coach's job. You know, I don't know the nuances of golf and, you know, all these different sports out there, but I just know the global way of this. Your rotator cuff should be super strong if you're going to put a racket at the end of your hand and hit something really hard over and over and over.
So you can test their strength, their range of motion. Mm-hmm. So they don't necessarily need to have a whole session plan of care with you. A screening can be just a one-time screen.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And that would be something that if a coach came to us and said, hey, I want to have my athletes screened, that's just something we would work out with the coach and figure out how we can make it happen.
Excellent. Well, we're coming to the end of the program, so I want to make sure that I give you a moment to share any final thoughts or key takeaways for our listeners.
I would love, in a perfect world, you know, most people go see their primary care doctor for an annual well visit. And I think it would be great if people could come to physical therapy for like an annual well visit. In our insurance world, that's not necessarily going to happen. But most people have a lot of deferred maintenance on multiple body parts that if they checked in with their primary care provider and talked about it, then maybe they could get them a referral to PT. So then things just don't build on top of one another. And then here is the demise of my ability to go hiking. First, I sprained my ankle, and then I had my knee replaced, and then I had that little bit of cancer, and so I wasn't active. And then now 2 years later, I'm not doing anything. I would say just every time you've got just a little nagging thing that's not quite right, don't let it go too long before you just roll up your sleeves and get into PT and get it fixed.
Don't delay.
Don't delay.
Well, thank you so much to Dr. Lisa Carroll for being with us today. And thank you to our producers, Rachel Cassandra and Emily Mesner. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Thank you.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.